Aloha, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show, and this is November 16th, 2018. Tonight, I have a really special show. We're going to do something totally different. We're going to talk about marriage licenses and the really truth behind them, how to sign your name without assuming liability. And if we have time, we're going to talk about word magic. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about Mercury in retrograde again. And I've asked Jeanette to come back on. Jeanette Lucas is a really great psychic to come on and help me talk about Mercury in retrograde. Hi, Jeanette. How are you doing?
Hey, Kathy. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for staying up so late. I know it's late for you.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's talk about Mercury in retrograde. So here we are again. And do you want to give everybody your take on Mercury in retrograde, what it means?
Sure. Now, my take is a little different. So let me just tell people that I work with a guy by the name of Peter Marks, and he's an actual astrologer. Phenomenal, works for celebrities, major people, major players, but he works for the nice guy down the street, the nice neighbor next door. So let's see what he says. He says that Venus is going direct, and that's today, which is really interesting. He said, because of the Mercury in retrograde, don't sign contracts, don't buy a marriage license, but if you buy the license, don't get married yet. He said, it's going to turn around. Everything's going to be okay for romance, but not until December 10th. Now, here's what's interesting about Mercury in retrograde. Reevaluate your emotional situation with your partner and reevaluate, I hate to be really tender here, but I'm going to say your sexuality with your partner. So if your sexuality is fantastic, great, but wait till you go ahead and ask someone to marry you till the 10th. And what I find about this is that there's the good side to it is that it's going to work out, but if it is a bad intimacy, then things are probably going to fall apart. And the reason I say that is apparently you're getting hit by all these little Nerf balls in the air, and I guess Mercury just says, I'm going to kick you if you try to move forward right now. Now, also what's being talked about, which is really super neat, is financial problems. So if you say, oh, I want to go buy this big, you know, issue like a car, a house, you know, a $500 bike, a $1,000 bike, not the time to do it. Wait till December 10th. That's the best decision time. And a lot of people use this to either move or buy the house or say, oh, I think I've got to have that huge TV in my house. Don't do it. Wait till the 10th. You've got a good time right now to just relax. And I call it the pending list. And I think what people need to know is you can't always make things turn quickly like you'd like them to do. And so if you have to see your lawyer, don't sign any contracts. If you're making a deal with your wife, don't sign it. Say, I'll think about it. Wait till the 10th. And I was also told that you're going to have a change around January 6th. Things are going to be a little bit more intense. Your emotions are a little weird after the retrograde. And it's funny because when I want to go back to December 10th, and I want to say that crime could be up a little bit, the 6th, 7th, and the 10th. And the reason I say that is even though it's good on one angle, on another angle, unfortunately, this is the time to be aware. This is the time to buy yourself a camera in the house to be super careful, because if sexuality is up, you know, the male and the female or male, whatever, what I'm saying is that a person will be driven more sexually during this time. And so you must be more careful and aware of your surroundings. And you know, that's a silly thing, but gosh, if I was told to be careful and I was going someplace, I would say, okay, I'm aware of it. I'm going to handle it. But I tell people, please, you know, remember some sexuality situations are like a Dr. Ruth time. If everybody recalls Dr. Ruth, do you remember her? Dr. Ruth, I guess it's Westmark, or I can't recall her last name, but Dr. Ruth was telling people, okay, this time frame is a good time frame to have a child, or this time frame is a good time to, you know, mate, whatever you want to call it. But I will tell you that it looks like the 10th is the opening door. It does look good the 6th and the 7th, but the 10th is almost like the magic number for good relationships to kick in and say, I love you, honey. And it's a good date night. So it's coming. You just have to be patient. And for those criminals out there, watch out, because people will be watching for you. So they're going to prevent you from doing your deal. All the good stuff is that if you're in a rocky relationship, wait, take the person to dinner on the 10th, or go out and have a great brunch and say, oh, you know what? We've been through a lot. It looks like it's working out. Let's chit chat. Now, I just want to tell people, if they want to reach me, my website is reachjeanette, G-I-N-E-T-T-E, .com on your little search bar. And I'm probably going to sign off, Kathy, and I hope this helps your listeners. If they want to reach Peter, just pull up the website and you'll find Peter on there, and he knows a lot about astrology. He will not disappoint. So I think everybody's going to be happy with knowing things are going to fall into place.
Wow, that was very positive. Thank you. You did a much better job than I would of a Mercury in retrograde. So thanks a lot.
I'm just giving people information that Peter is saying, and then I'm giving the flip side of the negative and positive to understanding what's really going on. Because, you know, there is going to be some arguing going on, and you're just going to have to deal with it until the 6th, 7th, and then the 10th. And once the turnaround happens, you can say, instead of a pie fight, honey, let's have kissy kissy on the 10th. Yay!
Oh, and I might as well add that it's also a time that you can have car trouble, electrical trouble can happen. Communications of a biggie. And don't expect appointments to come together.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. It's the same thing. It's like two magnets do not come together. Two relationships do not come together. You have to be patient and wait. Yay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to sign off. Thank you. Love your show. And thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. We'll have to bring you on again.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night. Well, that was fun. I have to say that was a really great interpretation of Mercury in retrograde. So let's talk about something that might be fun or may not be fun, but let's talk about marriage licenses. Now, did you know what you got into when you got a marriage license from the state? You were actually tricked into signing over your children to the state, which is what they mean by fruit of the marriage. So let's talk about the real truth about marriage licenses. And this was actually written by Virgil Cooper, and I thought it was actually brilliant. It starts off, enlightening conversation with a marriage license bureau. So about 15 years ago, my former wife of 26 years filed for a divorce. We had 7 children, 5 daughters, 2 sons. Our youngest at the time, our second son, was 5 years old. At the time, I prepared a counterclaim to the petition for disillusionment. Her attorney filed in domestic relations court. I met one afternoon with the head of the Maricopa County Superior Court Marriage License Bureau in downtown Phoenix. The Marriage License Bureau was headed by a young woman of about age 25. I asked her to explain to me the general and statutory implications of the marriage license. She was very cooperative and called in an assistant, a tall black man who at the time was working on an operations manual for the internal department use. She deferred for most technical explanations to her assistant. He walked through the technicalities of the marriage license as it operates in Arizona. He mentioned that marriage licensing is pretty much the same in other states, but there are differences. One significant difference he mentioned was that Arizona is one of 8 Western states that are community property states. The other states are common law states, including Utah, with the exception of Louisiana, which is a Napoleonic code state. God, I'm going to have to look up that one. He then explained some of the technicalities of the marriage license. He said, first of all, the marriage license is a secular contract between the parties and the state. The state is a principal party in that secular contract. The husband and wife are secondary or inferior parties. The secular contract is a three-way contract between the state as principal and the husband and wife as the other two legs of the contract. He said in the traditional sense, a marriage is a covenant between the husband and wife and God. But in the secular contract with the state, reference to God is a dotted line and not officially considered included in the secular contract at all. He said if the husband and wife wish to include God as a party in their marriage, that is a dotted line they will have to add in their own minds. The state's marriage license is strictly secular, he said. He said further that what he meant by the relationship to God being a dotted line meant that the state regards any mention of God as irrelevant, even meaningless. In his description of the marriage license contract, the related one other dotted line, he said in the traditional religious context, marriage was a covenant between the husband and wife and God, with husband and wife joined as one. Now, this is not the case in the secular realm of the state's marriage license contract. The state is the principal or dominant party. The husband and wife are merely contractually joined as business partners, not in any religious union. They may even be considered, he said, connected to each other by another, and he quotes, dotted line. The picture he was trying to paint was that of a triangle with the state at the top and a solid line extending from the apex, the state, down the left side to the husband, and a separate solid line extending down the right side to the wife. Parentheses, dotted line, merely showing that they consider themselves to have entered into a religious union of some sort that is irrelevant to the state. He further mentioned that this religious overtone is recognized by the state by requiring that the marriage must be solemnized either by a state official or by a minister of religion that has been deputized by the state to perform the marriage ceremony and make a return of the signed and executed marriage license to the state. Again, he emphasized that marriage is a strictly secular relationship so far as the state is concerned. And because it is looked upon as a privileged business enterprise, various tax advantages and other political privileges have become attached to the marriage license contract that have nothing at all to do with marriage as a religious covenant or bond between God and a man and a woman. Now, by way of reference, if you would like to read A Legal Tryst on Marriage, one of the best is Principles of Community Property by William DeFoniak. At the outset, he explains that community property law descends from Roman civil law through the Spanish codes 600 AD, written by the Spanish jurisconsults. In the civil law, the marriage is considered to be a for-profit venture or profit-making venture, even though it may never actually produce a profit in operation. And as the wife goes out to the local market to purchase foodstuffs and other supplies for the marriage household, she is replenishing the stocks of the business. To restate, in the civil law, the marriage is considered to be a business venture. That is a for-profit business venture. Moreover, as children come into the marriage household, the business venture is considered to have borne fruit. Now, back to the explanation by the Maricopa County Superior Court Marriage Bureau's administrative assistant. He went on to explain that every contract must have consideration. Now, the state offers consideration in the form of the actual license itself, the piece of paper, the certificate of marriage. The other part of consideration by the state is the privilege to be regulated by the statute. He added that this privilege to be regulated by statute includes all related statutes and all court cases as they are ruled on by the courts, and all statutes and regulations into the future in the years following the commencement of the marriage. He said, in a way, the marriage license contract is a dynamic or flexible, ever-changing contract as time goes along, even though the husband and wife didn't realize that. My thought on this is, can it really be considered a true contract as one becomes aware of the failure by the state to make full disclosure of the terms and conditions? A contract must be entered into knowingly and intelligently, intentionally, and with fully informed consent. Otherwise, technically, there is no contract. Another way to look at as the marriage license contract with the state is as a contract of adhesion, a contract between two desperate, unequal parties. Again, a flawed contract. Such a contract with the state is said to be a specific performance contract as to the privileges, duties, and responsibilities that attach. Consideration on the part of the husband and wife is the actual fee paid and the implied agreement to be subject to the state's statutes, rules, and regulations, and all court cases ruled on related to marriage law, family law, children, and property. He emphasized that this contractual consideration by the bride and groom places them in a definite and defined by law position inferior and subject to the state. He commented that very few people realize this. He also said that it's very important to understand that children born to the marriage are considered by law as the contract, the husband and wife, bearing fruit, meaning the children primarily belongs to the state, even though the law never comes out and says so in so many words. In this regard, children born to the contract, regarded as the contract bearing fruit, he said, is vitally important for parents to understand two doctrines that become established in the United States during the 1930s. The first is the doctrine of parens patria. The second is doctrines of in loco parentis. Parens patria means literally the parent of the country, or to state it more bluntly, the state is the undisclosed true parent. Along this line, a 1930s Arizona Supreme Court states that parents have no property right in their children and have custody of their children during good behavior at the sufferance of the state. This means that parents may raise their children and maintain custody of the children as long as they don't offend the state. But if they in some manner displease the state can step in at any time and exercise its superior status and take custody and control of its children. The parents are only conditional caretakers. Now, this is true stuff, guys. Thus, the doctrine of in loco parentis. He also added a few more technical details. The marriage license is an ongoing contractual relationship with the state. Technically, the marriage license is a business license allowing the husband and wife, in the name of the marriage, to enter into contracts with third parties and contract mortgages and debts. They can get car loans, home mortgages, and installment debts in the name of the marriage because it's not only a secular enterprise, but is looked upon by the state as a privileged business enterprise, as well as a for-profit business enterprise. The marriage contract acquires property throughout its existence, and over time, it is hoped increase its value. Also, the marriage contract bears fruit by adding children. If sometimes later the marriage fails and a divorce results, the contract continues in existence. The divorce is merely a contractual dissolution or amendment of the terms and conditions of the contract. Jurisdiction of the state over the marriage, over the husband and wife, now separated, continues over all aspects of the marriage, over marital property, and over children brought into the marriage. That's why family law and the domestic relations court calls divorce a dissolution of the marriage, because the contract continues in operation, but in amended or modified form. He also pointed out that the marriage license contract is one of the strongest, most binding contractual relationships the state has on people. Let me say that one again. He points out that the marriage license contract is one of the strongest, most binding contractual relationships the state has on people. At the end of our hour-long meeting, I somewhat humorously asked if other people had come in and asked the questions I was asking. The assistant replied that in several years he had worked there, he was not aware of anyone else asking these questions. He added that he was very glad to see someone interested in the legal implications of the marriage license and the contractual relationship it creates with the state. His boss, the young woman in the Marriage Bureau department, had stated, "You have to understand that people who come in here to get a marriage license are in heat. The last thing they want to know is technical, legal, and statutory implication of the marriage license." So I hope this is helpful information to anyone interested in getting more familiar with the contractual implications of the marriage license. The marriage license, as we know it, didn't come into existence until after the Civil War and didn't become standard practice in all states until after 1900, becoming firmly established by 1920. In effect, the state or governments appropriated or usurped control of marriages in secular form, and in the process declared common law application to marriages abrogated. Essentially, the husband and wife become married to the state, and anything the two produce become the property and control of the state. So if you are thinking about getting married, you may want to think twice about getting a marriage license. Now, just wanted to let you know, married by a minister or pastor constitutes a marriage, okay? And or living together for more than 7 years also constitutes a marriage. So I don't think I will ever get married again, and I'm certainly not going to get a marriage license if I do. All right, now we're going to talk about something that I found a lot of people are really interested in, and that's how to sign your name without assuming liability. And you're going, huh? Well, I'm sure everybody talks about this, huh? Right up there with marriage licenses. All right, now pay attention. So this is how to sign your name without assuming liability. So what does a signature mean? Now, I'll tell you right now that when you sign something, no matter what they say, it means that you accept liability. And if you don't read and agree to everything you sign, you're making a big mistake. I'm constantly being asked, how do I sign my name and maintain my rights? We all know that before they let us go, they always want us to sign something to keep us coming back. There are other points in the legal system where a signature is expected or required before the court can proceed as well. Now, I have heard that adding under duress or all rights reserved to a signature when signing a document will maintain our inherent human rights. And while this could work as well, the proper and Latin way to sign under duress is to add a, and this is a capital letter V as in Victor, and a capital C as in Catherine, before your name. Vicoatus, abbreviated to VC, is a Latin term. The website Wikipedia cites the definition of vicoatus as constrained by force, used when forced to sign or else. Perhaps the most famous use of vicoatus when signing a document was that of Cornelius de Witt. Alexander Dumas captured the event as following. The grand pensionary bowed before the will of his fellow citizens. Cornelius de Witt, however, was more obstinate, and notwithstanding of all the threats of death from the Orangist rabble who besieged him in his house at Dort, he stoutly refused to sign the act by which the office of stadtholder was restored. Moved by the tears and entreaties of his wife, he at last complied, only adding to his signature the two letters VC, notifying thereby that he only yielded to force. There is scant authoritative information regarding this term on the web. However, on the One Heaven Society of United Free States of Spirits website, the following information is provided. The bar wants you to sign as surety. As key points in a court case, the bar members want you to sign certain documents. Why? Because your signature is like your vocalized consent. It can be legally interpreted as your agreement to be surety for an obligation and to perform, as well as to waive other rights. Do you have to sign? No, you don't. But in many cases, the bar has designed a system so that if you don't, it's interpreted as dishonor, so that they can invoke their power of attorney powers to declare you delinquent, incompetent, and send you to prison anyway. This is why you may have heard of people who refused to sign the papers when entering prison, and yet they were treated worse than most serious criminals with complete apparent ignorance of their rights. Why? Because the system is designed at certain points where you must sign. So how do you overcome an unjust and unfair system that forces a man or woman to sign under duress against their will and yet interprets such signatures as valid under canon law? The answer is making sure your signature follows a clear mark of duress. Before you sign anything under duress, in order not to be unfairly determined, as in dishonor and incompetent, you may lawfully initial in large letters the letters VC, where you will sign and then sign your name after, always after. What VC stands for is Latin for vicoatus, which means literally under constraint. That should normally be sufficient on any document which you're forced to sign to bear witness to the fact that it was done under duress. Now, all the earliest opportunity before the court and official, now at the earliest opportunity, before the court or official, you can make it known that upon review of your signature, it can be proven to have been forced under threat or coercion, and so cannot be used as the legal binding agreement. In some locations and in some prisons, as this knowledge grows, it is possible that law enforcement officials may start to reject such signatures, adding more threat and force on a person to sign without using VC. It is your choice, remembering that if you allow such criminal intimidation and torture to prevail and do sign without protest, then the system can simply lie and state that you made such a sign of your own free will. So if they tear up the paperwork and demand that you do it again, stating that such a signature is unlawful, then such claims are against the laws of the Roman cult canon law and the actual law that underpins their own statutes and regulations. However, if after several attempts they still refuse, there is a second method equally valid, the use of the ellipse. The use of ellipses, when the threat of intimidation or outright rejection of lawful protest is too great, then a second and equally valid method of signing under protest is permitted, namely by use of three full stops placed first, followed by the signature, so that the three dots are not obscured by the signature. This is called an ellipsis ig and indicates that legally there was a form of words you wanted to state but were unable due to some event, in this case because of threat and coercion. Thus, at the earliest opportunity, the ellipsis can be revealed and it can be stated that you intended to write BC but were prevented, therefore nullifying any agreement. All right, so that is what I have on how to sign your name without assuming liability. All right, we're going to move forward, and we are going to talk about word magic. And it's also a form of mind control that the New World Order is putting out. So I want you to think about this. When human children first go to school, they're taught the alphabet, you know, letters of sacred geometry, and then taught how to spell using that geometry. Can this be accidental? They are taught the corrected spelling of certain words to make sure that the geometry of the letters is arranged for the most beneficial effect, and then taught to cast those spellings into sentences, phrases, and ideas, which will later entrap their minds by using those spellings. Is this too simple to understand? Word magic is taught to everyone, and only the higher adepts learn how to defend themselves from its constant use. Advanced races, those not enslaved, use telepathy for communication. They telepathically project ideas into your mind, not words. Word magic, speech, is reserved for races who are enslaved to other beings, since the use of sound vibration and sacred geometry used incorrectly could most certainly entrap them. Ask yourself, who gave us our current day language? Could it have been the reptilian human hybrids? What would have been their goal in gifting us with certain words to use? One last little bit from even though the fake name was first placed on things like the birth certificate and the passport, how could they get people to want to be the fake name early on and then consent to it daily? Answer, offer them money. The Social Security Act started offering people money as a reward for signing up with the corporate government and thus starting to use the all caps. name more and more just to get free money. This is one of the ways the trap was set, and it really was a trap. As indicated, the fake name is placed on the birth certificate, the passport, the driver's license, the credit card, the debit card, the doctor's records, the dental records, etc. However, if you state emphatically in a courtroom that you are not the all caps name and know what you're talking about, they have to let you go. No court can ever have a real living and breathing human being standing in it. Only fictions are allowed. So naturally, they presume every person in the court is not real. Our whole legal system is a total fraud and a total sham. All judges will end up demonically corrupt, and I'm certain that many of them are not actually aware of this at first. However, they are specifically trained in word magic and are told how they must say certain things in a certain order and to get a certain response repeated back to them. Otherwise, they, the judge, will be in dire trouble. Sadly, many of them never ask why. In practical terms here, ask yourself how they can throw a person into prison for having in their possession only an ounce of marijuana. This, by the way, is merely a plant created by God for crying out loud and has existed for probably millions of years and grows harmlessly in the ground. How could it possibly be outlawed? Have you ever heard of anything so stupid in your life? Who could think of their demented minds that picking a plant and just holding it could be a crime? The truth is, they actually can't. Crime creator would obliterate them where they stand if they did it in a way that removed any of your free will. So they, in the greatest tradition of Satan, learn to trick, bedazzle, and fool you into consenting. According to cosmic law, they can punish the fake name that you are using all they want because they own it. And sadly, if you're foolish enough to admit to being that fake name, well, I guess you are then consenting to being punished, aren't you? Sure, this is fairly convoluted and very sinister. However, according to the rules of dark magic and cosmic law, you are technically being given a choice. And if there is a choice, then your free will is not taken, is it? So this becomes the con and the loophole that these dark magicians are exploiting all over the earth. They use fear, intimidation, mind control, television, video games, and school teachers to train you to believe that you should just trust them. And always you give your consent when asked, because that's the way it is. Dark, dark, dark magic. And you now understand why you need free will. Only a very sick soul gives its freedom away to others. Each time you enter a courtroom, the judge calls a name that sounds like yours. The judge, without you realizing, is actually only calling the all caps name. Of course, how would you know that just by hearing it? Both names sound identical. Is this tricky or what? So if you stand up and answer to that, you just claim to be a fiction. And they can do whatever they want to a fiction. Yeah, this is quite dastardly. Notice that the judges are not told right away the scam that they're helping to perpetrate, but instead they train very carefully in word magic and told that if they deviate from the all-important script, even just one word, the case gets thrown out. They must be specific words in specific order at certain steps to attain your consent magically without you being aware of what's happening. Now, for the ones who do know and have not yet quit the bench, there's a special dark place where each and every one of them will end up. Now, these Dark souls have knowingly committed treason against living souls by trickery with full knowledge of it. Since you individually are not as powerful as the dark magicians who know how to protect themselves, it's very likely you will all be severely punished after your physical death. And I, for one, will not shed a tear for your information. Prime Creator is not as powerless as the dark magicians are hoping. Now, equally as sad in this affair is that few, if any, of the street cops and basic law enforcers of the law know about any of this stuff. They are the low-level grunts with limited intelligence and have a strong desire to control others, which is why they gravitate toward enforcement jobs. They are trained to do certain things in certain ways and say certain things in a certain order before they drag human beings into the court without being told that it's all a sham. They think that they really do have a right to hurt you. They've been lied to, which is why they are not held immediately accountable for what they do by the Prime Creator. Even as he was being crucified, those that honestly believe in that authority, they are basically ignorant of the cosmic law, and it doesn't excuse them of their behavior, and they will have to repay the debt. So the whole thing is that start thinking about police, judges, priests, and politicians in terms of magic. They are magical enforcers. They are contract enforcers. They are consent enforcers. They are able to do what they do with such venom. Remember that all contracts and all consent given have supernatural levels that you're not aware of. Sometimes police seem to appear almost out of thin air because things are going on in this reality, which very few people, except the magicians, understand. When you give consent and contract or agree to what is basically a realm or a reality construct that is being designed by those who worship in the synagogue of Satan, this is what we're fighting against. You unfortunately enter into magic spells which follow you around all day to make certain you keep up your end of the bargain. Many believe that when they see things manifesting into reality that they don't like, they need to fight it physically, which is a mistake. Thus you get protests and sit-ins and occupies and marches and finally battles or wars. Magic can't be defeated that way. You already agreed to the terms in contract. Rebelling against them has no teeth. The only way to win is to undo the magic of contract and consent. Now, I didn't write this, and I have to say that I do disagree with that part. You really do have to do the protests and the sit-ins and occupy and the marches, because battles, body, mind, and soul, it's, you do the battles in the etheric, and then you're in the physical form. So you do buy, so how do you get rid of the magic and the consent? And you do that by declaration. You declare that all previous contracts and consent are now null and void by the sacred power of your non-revocable and non-removable free will, which Prime Creator gave you, and thus no being can ever remove. The goal of the magicians was always to limit, bind, and tie down your free will by using the two insidious dark magic spells called contract and consent. The only way to break free of the spell is to undo it. You can't fight magic spells with physical strength or by battles. You can, however, arrest the magicians. But they're very clever and hide between multiple levels of puppets and actors who do their bidding. It's very hard to figure out who they really are. A declaration is a very positive statement of your intent for what is your choice now. Free will gives you the right to choose in any moment to change your mind and take a new path. That is why it's such a huge protection. It really is the greatest gift Prime Creator could ever have given any being in existence. To give away freedom or free will is to throw away the universe. To give away freedom or free will is to throw away the equivalent of a galaxy filled with unlimited fortunes directly into the trash. Useless and demonic restrictions like the Patriot Act make the magicians giddy with delight. Anyone who believes in the Patriot Act or supports it is supporting base evil. However, the dark magicians love when unlimited immortal souls dump their biggest protection of free will into the trash and hand it over so willingly. The paltry and insignificant protections that they promise in exchange for our freedoms are in fact monumental deceptions designed to bind you even further. Break free of the all magic by declaration. How did the people of the colonies break free from England? By declaration. It was a declaration of independence. It basically said, we declare that your magic up to this point is now null and void. And by using our free will, we make a new choice. This was a collective declaration. However, you can make a personal declaration. It's called Personal Declaration of Independence of the Body, Mind, and Soul.